Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And we'll begin today at a convention last night attended by more than 9,000 people that is hardly making news in the New York area because very few people from here were represented there. But what happened there might matter a lot to the near-term political future of our country and the long-term political and spiritual future. It was the annual Southern Baptist Convention in Dallas, where Vice President Mike Pence gave a speech last night. Now, the Southern Baptists are the largest Protestant denomination in the United States and a force in Republican politics and the culture wars. But the headlines from the convention might not be what you would expect if you didn't know what's been going on with them recently. NPR's headline, Pence speech riles some as Southern Baptist moderates gain strength. The New York Times headline, Pence reaches out to evangelicals, not all of them reach back. And on Vox, as Mike Pence praises Trump, Southern Baptists affirm support for immigrants. So when Pence said this, it didn't sound to everyone like friendly preaching. It sounded to some like politicking and pandering.
I think there's only one way you can sum up this administration. It's been 500 days of action, 500 days of accomplishment. It's been 500 days of promises made and promises kept.
And before Pence spoke, the convention actually considered a resolution to withdraw the invitation to him. In fact, it was one of the platform planks of the newly elected president of the Southern Baptists, J.D. Greer, who said this on Monday before he was voted in.
We believe that Jesus is the Lord of the whole earth. He is the King of kings and he is the Lord of lords. We believe that he, not any version of Caesar, is the Messiah. He is the Christ, the Son of the living God, that salvation is found in him, not in the Republican platform or the Democratic platform, and that salvation did not come riding in on the wings of Air Force One. It came in cradled in a manger.
The new president of the Southern Baptist Convention, J.D. Greer. And all of this comes as the famously conservative denomination has been struggling openly with racism and sexism. Do we have any Southern Baptists listening today? I know it's not a very New York, New Jersey, Connecticut religion, but maybe some of you are out there right now. What's your relationship to racial equality and gender equality and Trumpian, Pencean politics within the context of you being a Southern Baptist? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And with us now, Washington Post religion reporter Julie Zosmer, who's been at the convention this week. Julie, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So I see your headline today is Southern Baptists debate handling of a Me Too case and hear a controversial speech from Pence. Can you tell us first about the Me Too case?
Yeah, believe it or not, Vice President Pence was the second most controversial thing here. The case of Paige Patterson really was an even more acrimonious and emotional debate for a lot of people. Paige Patterson is a revered figure among Southern Baptists, or he was for decades until recently, when first women in the Southern Baptist Convention started pointing out that he's been giving some arguably quite sexist sermons for many years. He comments on women's bodies in his sermons. He has encouraged women who are abused not to leave their husbands. And this, as people started pointing out these sermons, caused an uproar, and thousands of Southern Baptist women signed a petition asking him not only to, he was the president of one of the Southern Baptist seminaries, not only to be removed from that job, but also he was supposed to deliver the big sermon at this convention, and they didn't want him to have that honor.
So what happened?
So what happened was, the Board of Trustees started looking at this, and it came to light that the most serious allegation by far was that Dr. Patterson had been told about a rape on another campus where he was a leader, and he had not reported this rape to the authorities. And when that came to light, the trustees fired him. He's not the president of the seminary anymore. And eventually, just before the convention started, he stepped down from giving the sermon. So he was not at this convention, but there was a lot of controversy nonetheless. Among people who actually thought that he'd been treated badly and he should not have been fired. And there was a vote on whether the trustees who fired him should themselves be fired for firing Paige Patterson.
Oh, boy. Sounds like the investigation into Trump and then the investigation into the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Baptist version. Well, how much is this issue of Paige Patterson preaching that abused women should stay with their husbands not just about this one preacher, but about what the church itself should stand for?
Yeah, it's a lot bigger. And on some level, the church has recognized that very, maybe a bit slowly, but very openly. And has this convention, two of the big resolutions that they passed first on Tuesday dealt with exactly that. There was a resolution on abuse that said very strongly that every church in the Southern Baptist Convention must report any sexual abuse, physical abuse to the authorities. And that resolution was endorsed by every major leader who's here. There was another one dealing with Paige Patterson is not the only scandal that Southern Baptists have had recently. And there've been several scandals involving ministers and extramarital affairs. So there was another resolution reminding ministers not to have affairs. And that passed with the overwhelming support. On the other hand, there is a lot of caution. There's a lot of people saying, wait, we do not want to buy this Me Too movement wholesale. We do believe in the Southern Baptist Convention that gender matters and that women are not supposed to do all the things men do. And the big thing is that Southern Baptists will not ordain a woman as a pastor.
And let
to
me,
lead a church.
Let me play a couple of more clips to this point or these points of this new president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Am I saying his name right? Is it J.D. Greear?
Mm-hmm.
G-R-E-E-A-R. So he said this week about race and gender in the church.
You know, our failure to listen to and honor women and racial minorities and our failure to include them in proportionate measures and top leadership roles have hindered our ability to see sin and injustice and call it out.
So maybe that's not something people are used to hearing from leaders of the Southern Baptist Convention, but here's something that he said just last month about gender roles and this idea that men and women are actually designed by God to do different things is sometimes referred to as the first word you'll hear in this clip, complementarianism.
Complementarianism teaches that there are roles, distinct roles that God gives to men and women in the home and in the church, and that is biblical, and we need to honor that, and we need to be faithful to that, but at the same time recognize that God has gifted women with spiritual gifts and leader and positions of honor, and we need to be as committed to raising them up in leadership and ministry as we are to our sons.
So I don't get yet how those two things fit together. Can you explain it?
Well, that second thing that J.D. Greear said makes a lot of people nervous here. There's a number of Southern Baptists who are worried about what it means to empower women in positions of leadership. There was a pastor who did not make it to the floor but wanted to introduce a motion here that would ban women from being president of the Southern Baptist Convention, which has never happened, but there was an idea that was floated that a woman could be nominated this year, which didn't happen, and he wanted to make sure that didn't happen. A motion that did make it was saying that the convention should study the issue and should report back next year with a report on whether the Bible would endorse a woman as president of the denomination. The answer that many, many people here would give is no. A woman can't be a pastor of a local church because of it's in 1 Timothy that there's discussion of a woman not preaching to men, and that they would take that to apply to the whole denomination. And so when J.D. Greear says, let's put women in positions of leadership, a lot of people say, well, sure, but what positions?
and that remains unresolved.
Yeah. Some of the seminary presidents yesterday on stage gave a very strong defense. They said that when they secular accrediting organizations come to their campuses to accredit their colleges, they always get asked about what roles are open to women, and they insist that they will never have a woman as a preaching professor because a woman's not supposed to be preaching to men.
Now, listeners, we'll put out the call again for any of you listening right now who happen to be Southern Baptists. We invite your voices on what this denomination of Protestantism, the largest denomination of Protestantism, following on its 9,000-member convention in Dallas this week, is dealing with, and not just for the internal workings of that church or that the people in that denomination, but also with vast national political implications, which we will get to as we continue with Julie Zosmer, religion reporter for the Washington Post, who covered that convention in Dallas this week. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll try one more time to see if it's a needle in a haystack to find a Southern Baptist in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut listening to the show right now. And we know some of you listen from around the country, so maybe somebody wants to call in and weigh in from your kind of personal experience or personal theological standpoint or political standpoint. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So you said the speech by Mike Pence last night was only the second most controversial thing that happened at the convention yesterday behind this conversation about gender. Let me play a couple of more very short clips from Pence's speech. I read that this is the line that got the biggest round of applause.
We opened the United States Embassy in Jerusalem, the capital of the state of Israel.
And another way that he was promoting the Trump administration.
President Donald Trump is the most pro-life president in American history.
To my ear, it sounded more like they were applauding louder for life. But what was controversial about Pence speaking at all?
So I think the number of people who objected to his speech went way up after he gave it. There was a sizable but small number who objected in the first place, who said that either they said that politicians shouldn't be speaking at all to this Christian gathering, or that this vice president shouldn't be speaking because his administration is so alienating to people of color and to women, who are exactly the people who Southern Baptists are trying to reach out to right now and to stop alienating. But most people, I think, were unbothered by the idea that he was going to come and give an address about how important Southern Baptists are in the life of the nation. Then he came and he gave what was largely a campaign speech with some more traditional sermonizing at the end. And many, many people in this audience who are Trump supporters and agreed with much of what they heard still didn't think it was appropriate for this gathering. Lots of people thought he crossed a line and he was too political.
Now, the SBC is one of the most solid strongholds of Trump and Pence support of any demographic in America, right?
Yes. And the fact that they were uncomfortable with his speech does not mean they're not Trump supporters. They certainly are. I don't want to imply that.
So what was too political about the speech for some people?
I think, first of all, they're very aware of the outside image and that they do want to be putting forward a welcoming stance to evangelize to anybody, and they don't want to associate the Southern Baptist Convention with the Republican Party. Second, there's theological concerns about make America great again and America first. Those slogans don't necessarily line up with the beliefs of Southern Baptists.
In what way?
I mean, J.D. Greer actually afterward had a statement that I don't have in front of me, but he talked about sending a mixed message, and that there were a number of pastors who said, you know, we're not here to glorify any man other than Jesus. That the boosting of Trump was not exactly what they expected. They expected more like what Vice President Pence did at the very end when he was talking about the tragedy at Sutherland Springs, which was at a Baptist church. And he was talking about how the faith of the survivors inspired him. I think that was more the address they expected all along.
I'm curious, since he brought up the shooting at Sutherland Springs at a Southern Baptist church, did he say anything in support of gun rights in that context?
He did not say a word, but the day before, in the resolutions that the Southern Baptists passed, they passed an interesting one on gun violence that basically deplored mass shootings, urged government leaders to do something about it without offering specifics, and then also said, but we respect the Second Amendment. They did the same thing on immigration, where they passed a resolution that said, we believe in the dignity and the sanctity of the family and keeping families together, which is obviously not what the Trump administration is doing right now. And also saying we respect the rule of law and we, you know, want strong borders, trying to walk both a moral line and a conservative line that appeals to, you know, the conservative beliefs of most Southern Baptists.
So for you,
some of these really tough issues.
For you as a religion reporter, did it surprise you that this, you know, bulwark of the religious right, the Southern Baptist Convention, would seem to take a middle waffling position on things like gun rights and on immigration? The headline that I read earlier from Vox, Mike Pence praises Trump, Southern Baptist affirms support for immigrants. That makes it sound like an even stronger affirmation for immigration, which is, you know, probably the number one issue on which Trump got elected as president.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that might be going a bit too far. This resolution was not crafted to be adversarial in the way that actually the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, to look at the largest denomination in the country, they actually did take a very adversarial stance yesterday, really a strong moral voice against what the Trump administration is doing. What the Southern Baptists did was crafted to be a compromise position, so much so that they passed this resolution without even any debate. It was just meant to affirm some basic principles. The Bible says, welcome the stranger, and to say sort of, we're watching this, but not to be too hard-hitting.
So let's take a phone call. By the way, sometimes all it takes is a second ask. And now our board of calls is pretty much full. Joshua in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joshua.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to comment that I think that, you know, when you're talking about Mike Pence, Southern Baptist, of course, we don't all support Trump. Some Southern Baptists support him, some don't. But I think that one core value that you'll find that all of us uphold, which is really a very strong belief in separation of church and state, that's a historical and, you know, modern extrapolation of Southern Baptists. We really do believe in that. We believe in free speech very strongly. So, you know, I think that having Trump is not necessarily an endorsement by the Southern Baptist of Pence.
Having Pence there, yeah. But, you know, some of the history, Joshua, that we've been going over in our series, A Brief History of the Culture Wars, is that in the 1970s, after some of the progressive movements broke out, like for abortion rights and for gender equality and gay rights, that the backlash was such that the Southern Baptists, among some other denominations, said, holy moly, now we have to get involved in politics, even though it's our traditional standpoint to separate the two. And then they've become this force that we generally call the religious right. So there doesn't seem to be contemporary ambivalence among the Southern Baptist as an organization and other conservative evangelical denominations, or do you think that overstates it?
I think that's somewhat of an overstatement, or maybe even an oversimplification of the issue. I think, you know, if you look at the line of Baptists and Baptist thinking from a historical perspective, it was, after all, the Danbury Baptist who gave us separation of church and state. You know, we really do believe. Now, my individual interpretation of the Bible, which is, you know, based upon a view that the Bible is infallible, that's not necessarily for the state to dictate or to regulate. You know, the state should be free from the church, and I think most Baptists really do understand that.
Joshua, thank you very much. Do you have anything to add to that, Julie?
Yeah, I think Joshua's right that Baptists in particular do have a historic emphasis on religious freedom and on the separation of church and state. But there's a very strong emphasis also in Baptist tradition on political issues as moral issues, especially abortion. That is your vote when it comes to how a candidate votes on abortion is seen as a moral choice that your religious beliefs should dictate. So, you know, saying that they're separate is fine in theory, but when it comes to practice, you know, that matters for your religion as well as for your politics.
Wendy in Pound Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was calling in because I was raised Southern Baptist. My dad is a Southern Baptist minister, and I have a 13-year-old daughter, and we were just at my parents' 2 weekends ago, and I deal with the women should submit to men and sort of the perception of women as having this feminine role constantly when we visit. And just this past, you know, Sunday when we were there, my dad was actually quoting the scripture that says women should submit to men. And my daughter was sketching in her sketchbook, and she was sketching, "I will never submit to a man. I am an equal." And then she said, "I'm going to leave this on the pew when we leave." And I was trying to encourage her not to. Although I have encouraged guerrilla art, I tried to encourage her not to leave that after her grandfather's sermon. But he definitely is, you know, when they're debating whether or not women can be in the ministry, or, you know, whether women should submit to their husbands, I mean, it's something that I've dealt with my whole life. And even today, I won't take her, except for when my father's preaching, to a church that doesn't allow women to be in the ministry.
So why do you think this is still even a question in the church? I mean, almost every other American would probably say, or maybe this is giving every other American too much credit, that the idea that a woman should submit to her husband as a matter of course, as opposed to them each sort of equally submitting to each other and et cetera, you know, it just would seem so retrograde to most people at this point that that's a current controversy. How do you understand it?
So I understand it as scriptural interpretation. But I, you know, how do I understand it as a feminist? It's a way for men to, you know, dominate, you know, the family structure, to dominate the church. And so I don't think that they would ever relinquish that. I mean, I can simply ask my dad, "Hey, Dad, you know, what kind of tool should I use for this project that I'm working on?" And he will say to me, "Have you asked your husband?"
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, "Well, my husband is, you know, traveling in Europe or wherever. I'm just asking you." But he won't even, you know, answer the question without, you know, having me check in with my husband first. And again, he raised me to be, you know, I have a college degree, I'm very independent, yet he does expect that I would submit to my husband. And now he, you know, makes these comments. And he did tell my daughter, though, that he would like her to go to the Naval Academy. And then I just told her, I said, "Listen, you just have to take these little bits as progress."
Where you can find them. Thank you so much for telling your story. We really, really appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
As we continue with Washington Post religion reporter Julie Zosmer, who covered the Southern Baptist Convention in Dallas this week with over 9,000 people. So, Julie, is this like an out-in-the-open conversation at the convention? You know, of course, women should submit to their husbands, that should be a premise of our religion, and other people saying, oh, come on, you're so 19th century. I mean, how out in the open is this conversation, and how much division is there around that principle?
The first part is definitely out in the open. I don't hear anybody saying, oh, that's so 19th century. I think it's important to note that while there's many people like the caller who, and it sounds like the caller's doing a really wonderful job of being caught in between there and parenting her daughter and listening to her father's beliefs, there's a lot of people. The Southern Baptist Convention is 15 million members, many of whom are women. It's not like this is something that men are imposing on women entirely. There are many women who look at their options and decide that this is what they want. And I think that's important to note. One of the most moving moments, I thought, yesterday, actually, during that debate about Paige Patterson, was a woman who was probably 70 or 80 years old. I don't know. But she was an older woman, and she came up to the microphone in a long line of prominent pastors. There were some very notable men speaking, and she got up there and she said, look, I don't know what we should do. I don't know if we should fire these trustees or not, but I want to tell you my experience. And she said, I am not a Me Too. And I asked the other women in my church, and I don't know anyone who's been sexually assaulted. I don't know anyone who feels looked down upon by men. That movement doesn't represent me. And it was this moment of really, I think, voicing some of why Southern Baptist women do feel comfortable in this system, where they, before Me Too, it was that they didn't think feminism represented them. They heard feminism as, rightly or wrongly, but they heard it as anti-family and anti-mothers. And they didn't want any part of it, and they were more comfortable in a system that said, submit to your husband. It's not just coming from men.
And what about on race and racial justice? I read that the Southern Baptists expelled a church called the Raleigh White Baptist Church in Albany, Georgia. What can you tell us about that?
Yes. Race, I think, was something that people expected to be a bigger conversation here. It was last year. Last year's annual meeting had a pretty contentious fight over a resolution that should have been non-controversial. It was basically a resolution that said, we reject the alt-right. And somehow this turned into a big fight.
You don't think that would be controversial among Southern Baptists? Wouldn't that clearly be controversial among Southern Baptists, like some would like the alt-right?
I think the alt-right, people thought before last year, was beyond the pale. There's really nothing in white supremacy that matches up with, you know, these gospel beliefs, supposedly. But
wouldn't a lot of these folks be defending, let's say, Robert E. Lee statues and things like that as a proud part of their heritage?
Yes. But there's a spectrum. And they did end up passing this resolution eventually. But what happened this year was that the same pastor who wrote that resolution, he and several others came back with a resolution dealing with Southern Baptist history and saying this denomination, which was basically founded breaking away from other Baptists because they were a pro-slavery denomination, which in 1995, Southern Baptists apologized for slavery, but the talk this year was that they never apologized for the theology behind it. And they did agree to pass a resolution rejecting the theology of the idea of the curse of Ham, that African Americans are somehow different because of, you know, Ham was cursed in the Bible. So they rejected that, which would have been a big deal, I think, in another year. But this year was so consumed by gender that the race conversation did not get as much play.
It is amazing to think that slavery was once upon a time hung on Christianity as something that supported it in this country.
Yeah.
What's the racial composition of the Southern Baptist? Sorry, go ahead. What'd you want to say?
No. What were you saying?
I was just going to ask the racial composition of the Southern Baptist population in the United States and versus the makeup of the convention goers in Dallas this week.
Very largely white. I don't know the numbers, but it was there are quite a few prominent leaders in the Southern Baptist Convention who are not white, but most people in most pews across the country are.
Yeah. And before you go, are there implications for the midterm elections or national politics or the future of the Trump administration? One of the reasons that we're doing this segment on this show in this part of the country where there are very few Southern Baptists is because the divisions that you've described in your Washington Post coverage this week and that other media have been describing make it sound like there's some kind of cultural change afoot. There's not just a kind of digging in on everything that we associate with Trumpism in this very, very important group for Trump support and the election of Trump-supporting members of Congress on race, on immigration, on gender, like something might be starting to crack here after Me Too, at very least, among the Southern Baptists that might have electoral implications or other political implications. What do you think?
Yeah, I will say, first of all, the Trump administration does not want to lose the support of Southern Baptists or of white evangelical Christians more broadly. They're tremendously important to getting them elected, and they have recognized that, and evangelicals have had more of a voice in the ear of this administration than perhaps they've ever had. They are really the only religious figures consistently talking to the Trump administration. I think the Catholic leaders have been largely shut out in a way that's unusual, and anybody else really doesn't have much of a voice in this White House, and the evangelicals do. So theoretically, if they decided that immigration was a priority for them or prison reform or a number of issues that they've talked about but haven't really firmly pushed on, theoretically, they could have a lot of sway. I think in reality, they were Trump supporters 2 years ago and they're still Trump supporters. I don't think that many white evangelicals have changed their minds. But the administration is listening. There's a reason that Pence wasn't initially invited. He asked to come speak to this gathering, and then they invited him. They are paying a lot of attention to Southern Baptists.
Julie Zosmer, religion reporter for The Washington Post, who covered the Southern Baptist Convention this week. Thank you so much. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and much closer to home, New York City Council Speaker Cory Johnson with some news to announce coming up next.